The fourth-floor window was open. The drapes were drawn back. A studio apartment, derelict, but not demolished. Lila and Svetlana Hoth were standing together behind the kitchenette counter. 29 rounds gone. One left. I heard Lila's voice in my head again. "You must save the last bullet for yourself, because you do not want to be taken alive. Especially by the women." I climbed over the sill and stepped into the room. Chapter 81. The apartment was laid out the same as the ruined place on the second floor. Living room at the front, then the kitchenette, then the bathroom, then the closet in back. The walls were still up. The plaster was all still in place. There were two lights burning. There was a folded-up bed against the wall in the living room, plus two hard chairs. Nothing else. The kitchenette had two parallel counters and one wall cupboard. A tiny space. Lila and Svetlana were crammed hip to hip in it. Svetlana on the left, Lila on the right. Svetlana was in a brown house dress. Lila was in black cargo pants and a white T-shirt. The shirt was cotton. The pants were made of ripstop nylon. I guessed they would rustle as she moved. She looked as beautiful as ever. Long, dark hair, bright blue eyes, perfect skin. A quizzical half-smile. It was a bizarre scene, like a radical fashion photographer had posed his best model in a gritty urban setting. I aimed the MP5. Black and wicked. It was hot. It stank of gunpowder and oil and smoke. I could smell it quite clearly. I said, "Put your hands on the counter." They complied. Four hands appeared, two brown and gnarled, two paler and slim. They spread them like starfish, two blunt and square, two longer and more delicate. I said, "Step back and lean on them." They complied. It made them more immobile, safer. I said, "You're not mother and daughter." Lila said,
"No, we're not."
"So what are you?"
"Teacher and pupil."
"Good. I wouldn't want to shoot a daughter in front of her mother, or a mother in front of her daughter."
"But you would shoot a pupil in front of her teacher?"
"Maybe the teacher first."
"So do it."
I stood still. Lila said,
"If you mean it, this is where you do it."
I watched their hands, watched for tension or effort, or moving tendons, or increased pressure on their fingertips, for signs they were about to go somewhere. There were no such signs. The phone vibrated in my pocket. In the silent room it made a tiny sound, a whir, a hum, a grind, a rhythmic little pulse. It jumped and buzzed against my thigh. I stared at Lila's hands, flat, still, empty. No phone. She said,
"Perhaps you should answer that."
I juggled the MP5's grip into my left hand and pulled out the phone. Restricted call. I opened it and put it to my ear. Theresa Lee said,
"Reacher?"
I said, "What?"
"Where the hell have you been? I've been trying to call you for 20 minutes.
"I've been busy."
"Where are you? How did you get this number?" "You called my cell, remember? Your number is in the call log."
"Why is your number blocked?"
"Precinct switchboard. I'm on the landline now. Where the hell are you?"
"What's up?"
"Listen carefully. You had bad information. Homeland Security got back to us again. One of the Tajikistan party missed the connection in Istanbul. He came in through London and Washington instead. There are 20 men, not 19.
Lila Hoth moved, and the 20th man stepped out of the bathroom. Chapter 82. Scientists measure time all the way down to the picosecond, a trillionth of a regular second. They figure all kinds of things can happen in that small interval. Universes can be born. Particles can accelerate. Atoms can be split. What happened to me in the first few picoseconds was a whole bunch of different things. First, I dropped the phone. Still open, still live. By the time it was down level with my shoulder, whole lines of conversation with Lila were screaming in my head. On the same phone, minutes ago, from Madison Avenue, I had said, "You're down to your last six guys." She had started to reply, and then she had stopped. She had been about to say, "No, I've got seven." Like earlier, when she had started to say, "That's not close to me." The voiced, dentine fricative. But she had stopped herself. She had learned. For once, she hadn't talked too much, and I hadn't listened enough. By the time the phone was down, level with my waist, I was focusing on the 20th guy himself. He looked just like the previous four or five. He could have been their brother or their cousin, and probably was. Certainly, he looked familiar. Small, sinewy, dark hair, lined skin, body language bridging wariness and aggression. He was dressed in a pair of dark-knit sweatpants, a dark-knit sweatshirt. He was right-handed. He was holding a silenced handgun. He was sweeping it through a long, upward arc. He was aiming to bring it level. His finger was tightening on the trigger. He was going to shoot me in the chest. I was holding the MP5 left-handed. The magazine was empty. The last round was already chambered. It had to count. I wanted to change hands. I didn't want to fire from my weaker side under my weaker eye. No choice. To change hands would take half a second. 500 billion picoseconds. Too long. The other guy's arm was nearly there. By the time the phone was down around my knees, my right palm was slapping upward to meet the barrel. I was turning and straightening and tucking the grip back toward my chest. My right palm stopped and cradled the barrel, and my left index finger squeezed the trigger with exaggerated calm. Lila was moving on my left. She was stepping out into the room. My finger completed its squeeze, and the gun fired, and my last round hit the 20th guy in the face. The phone hit the floor. It sounded like the padlock, a loud wooden thump. My last spent shell case ejected and rattled away across the room. The 20th guy went down in a clatter of limbs and head and gun, dead before he hit the boards, shot through the base of the brain. A headshot, a hit,